All right. Well, it's the 27th of November, and it's Monday, and we are having a study night session. This is our fifth session looking at the kingdom of God, and there will be many. This is not something we're going to rush through. We want to learn all that we can. So we've learned so far about kingdoms in general and the kingdoms of men, and we looked at last week about King Saul. And how he was chosen by God. He was singled out to be the only one to be king, and he was anointed by God by way of Samuel the prophet. And he started out pretty well, but then within a couple of years, he stopped really obeying the direct commands that were given to him. And that was a big disappointment to God, as well as to Samuel. And God gave him another opportunity to carry out direct orders. And again, he did it partway, but he didn't really carry it out as he was told. And then God told Samuel, I have chosen somebody else to be king, that the kingdom will not continue with Saul, but I've chosen somebody else who will be a man after my own heart. And we want to pick this up now in 1 Samuel chapter 16. And we want to see who God selected and how it came to pass. And we'll start right in the first verse here. It says, And the Lord said unto Samuel, How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil, and go, I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. So a couple of things we can learn right off the bat. The fact that someone is chosen and anointed by God does not mean that he will necessarily fulfill everything that God wants him to, okay? The fact that someone is chosen and anointed doesn't mean that he will execute properly, because everyone has free will. And there are other influences in a person's life, possibly outside of the Word of God itself. So in Saul's case, there were other motivating factors that he had and other influences, unfortunately, and he didn't do what God had hoped he would do. So he's going to send Samuel to Bethlehem. Jesse the Bethlehemite means he lives in the city of Bethlehem. And he didn't tell Samuel which one of his sons that he had provided. So Samuel just has to go step by step. So we learn a little something about revelation and word of wisdom in this as well, that sometimes God will tell you what to do in advance. He'll give you the whole picture. Sometimes he will just tell you piece by piece or step by step. So in this case, it was a step-by-step process. He said, go to Bethlehem and go to the house of Jesse, and one of his sons will be the next king. Verse 2, And Samuel said, How can I go? If Saul hear it, he will kill me. Now that's quite a remarkable statement, that Samuel the prophet said, if he knows I'm going to anoint somebody else to be king, that he will kill me, that Saul would actually kill a prophet of God. In fact, the same prophet that anointed him to be king. So Saul had really gone quite far in the wrong direction. And the Lord said, Take an heifer with thee, and say, I am come to sacrifice to the Lord. So he didn't contradict Samuel. He didn't say, Oh, no, he won't kill thee. He kind of indicated, Yeah, he would if he knew, but just follow my instructions and you will be okay. So just go there and say, I'm come to sacrifice to the Lord, and call Jesse to the sacrifice. And I will show thee what thou shalt do, and thou shalt anoint unto me him whom I name unto thee. So the sacrifice, it would be a situation they would sacrifice an animal and have people invited who would share in the eating of that animal, okay? But again, he's going step by step here. And Samuel did that which the Lord spake. He always did. Samuel was a faithful man. And he came to Bethlehem, and the elders of the town trembled at his coming and said, Comest thou peaceably? So they were startled when they saw him. And he said, Peaceably, don't worry, everything's okay, no cause for alarm. I am come to sacrifice unto the Lord. So sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and called them to the sacrifice. So he separated that family out. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab. And Eliab was Jesse's oldest son. And he said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. So God didn't tell him this, but he just looked at him. And he was a handsome, tall man, kind of like Saul was. He figured this must be the guy. The oldest son, the obvious one. Verse 7 says, but the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance, his handsome face, or on the height of his stature, the fact that he's very tall, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. God sees the inside of a person. He sees what a person is thinking. He sees the way a person thinks, the way he does things. He knows people from the inside out. But he said in this case, he refused him. So what he saw on the inside wasn't suitable for being king over Israel. Verse 8, then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Then Jesse made Shammah to pass by. And he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. And again, Jesse made 7 of his sons to pass before Samuel. And Samuel said unto Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. God still hadn't told him which one it would be, but he said, it's not one of these. And Samuel said unto Jesse, are here all thy children? And he said, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent, while everybody stayed standing. And he brought him in. Now he was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. That's interesting that shortly after he was anointed with the oil to designate him as king, he also received the Spirit of God. The Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day. So that day he got Holy Spirit. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah, where he lived, another city in Israel. But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. So if you remember, shortly after Saul was anointed to be king, the Spirit of God came upon him. Remember, he prophesied among the other prophets. But now it says the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. Now, that's a verse that might trouble you to read it, to think that an evil spirit from the Lord would come and trouble him. It troubled me to read that, but then I realized that this is a figure of speech, okay? It's a figure of speech. God doesn't send devil spirits to trouble people. We know that. It would be against the will of God to do so. But the word from is, it's two Hebrew words. It means from nearby, okay? Meaning from the heavenly realm. You know, God is in heaven. In the heavenly realm, there are, you know, God, angels, other spirit beings. There's also evil spirits, devil spirits in the heavenly realm. So this evil spirit from near the Lord, this was an evil spirit from the heavenly realm. So it wasn't just like a personality disorder or a chemical imbalance that would make Saul act in a different way. It wasn't a disease. It was a spirit from the heavenly realm that troubled Saul. And Saul's servants said unto him, behold, now an evil spirit from God troubleth thee. Let our Lord now command thy servants, which are before thee, to seek out a man who is a cunning player on a harp. And a harp, I don't know if it's the same kind of harp that we think of, like Harpo Marx would play, but it was a stringed instrument of some kind, okay? So seek out a man, a cunning player on a harp, on a stringed instrument, and it shall come to pass when the evil spirit from God is upon thee, that he shall play with his hand, and thou shalt be well. So these men that advised the king, they had an understanding that if there was an evil spirit troubling him, soothing music would help him be in his right mind again. And Saul said unto his servants, provide me now a man that can play well, and bring him to me, Then answered one of the servants and said, Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite that is cunning in playing and a mighty valiant man and a man of war and prudent in matters and a comely person, handsome, good looking, and the Lord is with him. Wherefore Saul sent messengers unto Jesse and said, Send me David thy son, which is with the sheep. And Jesse took an ass laden with bread and a bottle of wine and a kid and sent him by David his son unto Saul. And David came to Saul and stood before him, and he loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. And Saul sent to Jesse, saying, Let David, I pray thee, stand before me, for he hath found favor in my sight. And it came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took an harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed, and it was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. So this evil spirit would come and go. When it would come, it would have a bad effect upon him. But when David would play the music for him, he'd get better. Now, the next chapter is all about the big battle with Goliath, and I think pretty much all of us are familiar with that chapter. I just want to mention a couple of things about it. That when David went to the battle, he was sent there by his father, and he saw this big Philistine come out and make his speech defying Saul and his army, but David said, no, he's defied the living God, okay? He's defied God. And who does he think he is? He's just an uncircumcised Philistine. And he knew in his heart that he could defeat him. Nobody else in the whole army of Saul, including Saul himself, felt like they would be able to fight and beat this man, but David did. Now, any one of them should have, because it says in the law of Moses that if you're walking with God, and if the nation is walking with God, then it says one of you shall chase 1,000, and two of you shall put 10,000 to flight. So any one of them, if they were walking with God, should have had the confidence to take this man on. But David did. He knew the word of God, and he also had the Spirit of God upon him. And we don't see in the record him receiving revelation from God, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen either, okay? Because not every situation where someone receives revelation, it doesn't always record the conversation between God and that person. Like in the last chapter, you see God speaking to Samuel and telling him what to do. There are many other records where a person does what God tells them, but it doesn't record the part about God telling him, you see? So David did have the Spirit of God upon him, and it says that he saw Goliath in the same category as when he was taking care of his father's sheep, and a lion came and took one of the sheep, and he went after the lion, as a good shepherd should. A good shepherd should not run from a dangerous animal. They would go after a predator to defend the sheep. And he explained this to King Saul when Saul said, well, you can't fight this guy. He's a man of war from his youth, and you're just a youth yourself. You don't stand a chance. And he said, no, I was taking care of my dad's sheep. A lion came. I grabbed him by the beard, and I beat him, and I rescued the little lamb out of his mouth. Same thing happened with the bear. A bear took one of the sheep, and I went after the bear, and I smote the bear, and I killed him. And he said, God delivered the lion into my hand and the bear into my hand, and he'll do the same with this uncircumcised Philistine. So David, again, had already been anointed as king. He's not yet recognized by anybody as king, but he had been anointed as king over Israel. And he is taking on this job of defeating the challenger as a good king would, okay? Like being shepherd over all of God's people. And that's the mindset that he had. And that's how God worked in him. And, of course, he did defeat him. Now, afterwards, in chapter 18, let's see what happens after the victory has been won. Verse 1 says, And it came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul. So David is speaking to Saul here. That the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. And Jonathan loved David as his own soul. Jonathan is Saul's oldest son. So David and Jonathan became best friends at this point. Verse 2 says, And Saul took him that day, took David that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And maybe you have a best friend like that. You just love that guy as much as you love yourself. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war. And he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So he became like the head general of Saul's army after defeating Goliath. And he did really well. And it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music, big victory parade. And the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. He said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? So Saul already knew, because Samuel had told him, that the kingdom would be taken from him and given to a neighbor of his that was better than he was. And now Saul is getting to realize that I think David's that guy. Verse 9 says, and Saul eyed David from that day forward. So, got my eyes on you, you know. Let's read a couple more verses. And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. So he's prophesying, but not by the Spirit of God. He's prophesying by that evil spirit from the heavenly realm was making him say things. And when a person prophesies by a devil spirit, it's not going to be good stuff, you know? So he prophesied in the midst of the house, and David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the javelin. He threw his spear, his javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. So this happened not just once, but twice. Imagine being near this guy and he's chucking spears right at you, trying to kill you. And Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, David, and was departed from Saul. So after this, it says that Saul removed David from him and made him his captain over 1,000, kind of demoted him, not head of the whole army, but just over 1,000 men. And he went out and he came in before the people. And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. Not that David would necessarily hurt him, but that the kingdom would be taken away from him and given to David. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. That phrase, to go out and come in, means he was a leader. He would go out and make presentations to the people and speak to the crowd, and they just loved him. So I'm not going to read all these records because there's just too many chapters that talk about this relationship between Saul and David, so I'm just going to have to summarize. But we can see that Saul has degraded. This evil spirit's troubling him. He's jealous of David. He tries to figure out ways to get rid of him. One thing that he did is he tells David, I'm going to have you marry my daughter. And David says, oh, I can't do that. You're the rich king, and I'm just from a poor family. It's not going to work. I don't have a dowry or anything like that to give you. And Saul says, oh, you don't have to give me any money. All I will require of you is 100 foreskins of the Philistines. So he's thinking, David's not going to live through this attempt to collect 100 foreskins from 100 Philistine soldiers. So he puts him on this errand thinking he's going to die in the process. Well, David comes back with 200 foreskins and says, okay, give me my wife. So he winds up being Saul's son-in-law, but he knows that Saul's trying to kill him. And he tells Jonathan, and Jonathan, oh, no, Dad wouldn't do that to you. And he said, yeah, I really think he will. And Jonathan says, well, let me talk with him. And he does, and Saul gets furious at his son Jonathan for sticking up for David and tries to kill Jonathan. And Jonathan realizes, yeah, David's right. My dad is really trying to kill him. So David goes off into hiding. Now, Saul hunts him down like a dog. Anytime he finds out where David happens to be, he sends his army after him. He goes after him himself. David does have a group of men, about 600 or so, that follow him wherever he goes. And there were a couple of times where Saul found out where David was and tried to kill him. And David proved to Saul that he wouldn't touch him, he wouldn't harm him. Let me read one of these with you because it's really interesting. Chapter 24, verse 1 says, and it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. So he gets a small army to try to kill David. And he came to the sheepcotes by the way, where was a cave. And Saul went in to cover his feet. That is a phrase that means he had to go to the bathroom, number two. And so he'd have to squat down and his robe would cover his feet. So Saul's in this cave, you know, doing his business. And David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. So he happens to be in the same cave where David and all his men are hiding. He has no idea that David and his men are in there. They're all just silent, not making a sound. And the men of David said unto him, behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good unto thee. So they said, hey, this is your opportunity to get rid of Saul so he won't keep trying to kill you. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. So Saul must have been concentrating pretty hard not to notice that David had snuck up behind him and took his knife and cut off a little piece of the skirt of his robe. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. He felt bad that he had even done that. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed. David still had respect for Saul because he had been anointed by God as king over Israel, just as David himself had, only by the same prophet Samuel. So he often refers to King Saul as his master, the Lord's anointed. So God forbid I should do this thing to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise against Saul. He didn't allow any of his men to touch him. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, my lord the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. And David said to Saul, wherefore hearest thou men's words, saying, behold, David seeketh thy hurt? Say, people are lying to you, saying, I'm trying to hurt you. Behold, this day thine eyes have seen how that the Lord hath delivered thee today into mine hand in the cave. Say, I was in there with all my guys while you were going to the bathroom. And some bade me kill thee, but mine eye spared thee. And I said, I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father, see, yea, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand. See, recognize this? Look behind you. There's a piece missing. This is it. So I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not. Know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it. The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. As saith the proverb of the ancients, wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. It's like it says in Romans, "Avenge not thyself, I will repay, saith the Lord." After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? Say, like, why are you even bothering to come after me? I'm insignificant. The Lord therefore be judge, and judge between me and thee, and see and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand. And it came to pass, when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul, that Saul said, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, "Thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. And thou hast showed this day how that thou hast dealt well with me, for as much as when the Lord had delivered me into thine hand, ye didn't kill me." Verse 19, "For if a man find his enemy, will he let him go well away? Wherefore the Lord reward thee good, for that thou hast done it to me this day. And now behold, I know well that thou shalt surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thine hand. Swear now therefore unto me by the Lord, that thou wilt not cut off my seed after me, and that thou wilt not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David sware unto Saul. And Saul went home, but David and his men gat them up unto the hold. So even after all that, and all that Saul said to David, he still couldn't trust Saul at this point. And this was not the only time. You can read chapter 26, where Saul is again trying to kill David, has an army coming after him. And at night, everybody falls asleep. Even the men that are guarding Saul fall asleep. And he has a cruse of water and a spear stuck in the ground next to his head. And David sneaks into the camp, takes the spear, the cruse of water, and goes quite a ways away on the next hill and wakes everybody up and says, "Hey, the men that are guarding you haven't been doing their job. You could have been killed right now by me because I just came in and snuck into your camp, took your spear and the cruse of water that was by your head, and here they are." And again, Saul said, "Oh, I've played the fool. I know now that you would never harm me, and I won't try to hurt you anymore." But he still tried after that even. So David wound up having to leave the whole country, and he lived among the Philistines for over a year. Let's pick up the story in chapter 28, 1 Samuel 28. And this, we'll see how Saul comes to a bitter end of his life. 28 verse 1, "And it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight against Israel. And Achish said unto David, Know thou assuredly that thou shalt go out with me to battle, thou and thy men." And Achish is the king of Gath, where Goliath had been from. David's living among him, and the king of Gath is expecting David to come with him to fight against Israel. And David said to Achish, "Surely thou shalt know what thy servant can do." And Achish said to David, "Therefore will I make thee keeper of mine head forever." Now, Samuel was dead. He had died already at this point, and all Israel had lamented him and buried him in Ramah, even in his own city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and wizards out of the land. So familiar spirits and wizards, these are like mediums, those that would try to contact the dead. And if someone had a familiar spirit, that means it was a devil spirit that would imitate the voice of the dead person and speak through that medium, okay? God, way back in the days of Moses, said, "You don't go after these people, and you don't allow them to live among you, and you don't go to them. It will defile you." Verse 4 says, "And the Philistines gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gilboa. And when Saul saw the host of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart greatly trembled. And when Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not, neither by dreams, nor by Urim, nor by prophets." So he's asking God what to do, but God's not answering him. And I'll tell you why. God gives word of knowledge, word of wisdom to people that want to know his will. Saul had proved over and over again that he wasn't interested in doing the will of God. He was interested in keeping his kingdom. He would kill a prophet. He would kill David, a man of God. He actually did kill a number of priests of God because he heard that they had helped David. So God's not talking to him. He's not getting the answers he's looking for because, again, he just wants to know what to do to save himself. He's not interested in what the will of God is. Verse 7, then said Saul unto his servants, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servant said to him, behold, there's a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor. Now, wait a minute. Supposedly, he had gotten rid of all those that had familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. And yet, his top advisor said, oh, we know where one is, and we'll be happy to take you to her. So they, his advisors, are violating the law of God by keeping this woman around. And now Saul is violating the law of Moses, the law of God, by going to her. And Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment so she wouldn't know that it was the king. And he went and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night so nobody would see him. And he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me up whom I shall name unto thee. And the woman said unto him, behold, thou knowest what Saul hath done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? Says, you've heard what Saul has done. She doesn't know that she's talking to Saul right now. And Saul sware to her by the Lord. Again, he's going against the will of God, but he's swearing to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, bring me up Samuel. And the woman saw Samuel, and she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. Now she's getting information from a devil spirit. The devil spirit knows that this is Saul, and the devil spirit shows her an image of Samuel. And the king said unto her, be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said unto Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. And he said unto her, what form is he of? And she said, an old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel. So he remembered what Samuel looked like. And he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. And Samuel said to Saul, so it's not really Samuel, because Samuel's dead. So Samuel would be in quotes. So it's the devil spirit impersonating Samuel. So Samuel said to Saul, why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? And Saul answered, I am sore distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God is departed from me, and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do. Then said Samuel, wherefore then dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord is departed from thee and is become thine enemy? And the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me, for the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David, because thou obeyest not the voice of the Lord, neither executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. So he gives them a reason why, that he didn't execute God's fierce wrath upon the Amalekites, back in chapter 15 there. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me, meaning you and your sons are going to be dead tomorrow. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Then Saul fell straightway all along on the earth, and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no bread all the day nor all the night. And the woman came unto Saul, and saw that he was sore troubled, and said unto him, behold, thine handmaid hath obeyed thy voice, and I have put my life in my hand, and have hearkened unto the words which thou speakest unto me. Now, therefore, I pray thee, hearken thou also unto the voice of thine handmaid, and let me set a morsel of bread before thee, and eat that thou mayest have strength when thou goest on thy way. But he refused, and said, I don't want to eat anything, but she compelled him to eat, and he did. So, he did die. And Jonathan, his son, died in battle the next day. It says that Saul was shot by an arrow from one of the archers. and asked his armor bearer to kill him with his sword. The armor bearer would not. He refused to kill Saul because he was anointed by God. So Saul, it says he fell on his own sword and he died. Now, if you go to 1 Chronicles, this gives us the real reason why Saul died. 1 Chronicles chapter 10, verse 13. It says, so Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it. So the main reason Saul died was, first of all, he stopped obeying God's words that Samuel the prophet gave him, direct orders that God had given Saul to fulfill, and he didn't fulfill those. But what put the nail in the coffin, so to speak, was the fact that he went to one that had a familiar spirit, okay? That's something that the familiar spirit didn't say. He didn't say, you're going to die because you're talking to me right now. But that was the main thing. That's what really killed him. Let me show you something in Leviticus 20, where it talks about familiar spirits. Leviticus 20, verse 6 says, and the soul that turneth after such as have familiar spirits and after wizards to go a whoring after them, I will even set my face against that soul and will cut him off from among his people. That's something God said in his word and something that God fulfilled in the case of Saul. It also says in verse 27, if we skip down, says, a man also or a woman that hath a familiar spirit or that is a wizard shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones. Their blood shall be upon them. So Saul apparently had put all the familiar spirits out of the land except one, which was kind of typical of the way Saul obeyed God. He would make a show of doing the things that God told him to do, but he wouldn't do it all the way. He wouldn't do it completely. You know, like with the Amalekites, he killed them all except one, the king of the Amalekites. And they're supposed to kill all the animals. Well, they killed all the ones that were really not that good, but the good ones they kept alive so that they could sacrifice to the Lord. And Samuel said, no, you didn't obey. You didn't do what I told you to do. And here, you know, we're supposed to put all the familiar spirits and all the wizards away, but didn't do it completely. Now, after Saul died, David became king of the tribe of Judah, and he reigned in the city of Hebron for 7 years and 6 months, I believe, as king over the tribe of Judah. And one of Saul's sons, named Ishbosheth, was made king over the other 10 tribes of Israel, okay? And then Ishbosheth, he had a falling out with Abner, who was the general of the army, and Abner said, I'm just going to get all of Israel, bring them to David, and we're going to make David the king. And that's what happened. David became king over all the tribes of Israel, over the whole kingdom. And David served as king for a period of 40 years. And David walked with God. He really, really loved God, even though there are a couple of major mistakes that he made. But he loved God. And go to Psalm 145. One thing that you'll see about David as king is that he acknowledged that God was his king. Psalm 145, verse 1, says David's psalm of praise. It says, I will extol thee, my God, O King, and I will bless thy name forever and ever. You see, whereas King Saul was so concerned about keeping the kingdom to himself, David, he knew that God had anointed him as king, but in David's heart and mind, God was king, okay? David was sitting on the throne, but God's king over him, you see? Look at verse 10. It says, all thy works shall praise thee, O Lord, and thy saints shall bless thee. They shall speak of the glory of thy kingdom and talk of thy power to make known to the sons of men his mighty acts and the glorious majesty of his kingdom. God, I'm sitting on the throne, but you are the king. Look at Psalm 47, another psalm written by David. It says, O clap your hands, all ye people, shout unto God with a voice of triumph. For the Lord Most High is terrible. And it means that in a good way. It means like it's awesome. He is a great king over all the earth. He shall subdue the people under us and the nations under our feet. He shall choose our inheritance for us, the excellency of Jacob, whom he loved, Selah. God has gone up with a shout, the Lord with the sound of a trumpet. Sing praises to God, sing praises unto our King. Sing praises, for God is the King of all the earth. Sing ye praises with understanding. God reigneth over the heathen, over the nations, the Gentiles, the nations. God sitteth upon the throne of his holiness. The princes of the people are gathered together, even the people of the God of Abraham, for the shields of the earth belong unto God. He is greatly exalted. So David considered God to be king over Israel, to be king over him, himself, and to be king over all the other nations as well. Now, the other nations might not recognize that God is their king, but God is over them nonetheless, whether they recognize it or not. Now, well, let's save this for next week. So next week we'll see things that happened later on in David's reign. We'll look at some of the mistakes that he made. We'll look at who God chose to be king after him and some of the troubles along the way. Because not everything went smoothly for David. Even we know that in the beginning he was hunted by King Saul. He became king. He had battles to fight. He made some serious errors. He had trouble within his own family. But still, he was a man after God's own heart. And God made a promise to him that there would never fail a man to sit upon his throne. And we'll see how that promise was fulfilled down the road, too. That's about all that we can cover tonight. So thank you for joining us, and God bless each one of you.